on Becoming of Age, the podcast. A cautionary tale. Listen to what they say, then do the opposite. Your hosts, Colin Flynn and John M. Craig.
Driving and derailing. Those are our roles. Is that what you're saying, John?
That is correct. I told Colin, I said, right before we warm up every week, we don't talk about what we're going to talk about exactly, try to avoid it, actually. And I said, hey, you're driving. And I'm derailing. I will definitely derail. I'm sure of it.
We both usually do a pretty good job of that. So I've been involved I was trying to be a Mr. Home Repair, which for me always goes off the fucking rails. I don't even know why I try.
And I'm in Red Bank, New Jersey, and Colin's in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yes, that's it.
I had nothing to do with derailing the home project.
No, you didn't. Yeah, and no, so no. You're not. I think you've mentioned and made it a point that you're not really inclined towards those sort of home repair sort of things so much.
No. I'm not handy at all. It's my my dad. He's the one. It skips a generation.
So I have theories on the not handy, because I think a lot of people who count themselves as handy probably actually aren't. They're just dumb enough to dive in, and there's a lot of trial and error, and there's probably, they should probably keep stats like in baseball, like how many times you actually fixed it versus how many times you just got so far down the road with something that you really screwed it up and had to call whatever, the plumber, the electrician, the painter, the drywall guy, the whatever. But I'm stupid enough to just a lot of times just jump into these things without really, I should give it more thought. I should think, what's my time worth? My wife pointed that out to me today. What's your time worth? How long you been messing around with this? But I actually today decided that I would try to dive into electricity, which is a bad idea. Not so much that, it was a simple, in the garage, we had a plug-in in the garage that seemed, you got the top and the bottom plug-in. The top plug-in was kind of problematic, and the bottom one seemed to work fine. And so I got the idea that, it was the actual fixture itself, the little thing that you plug it into. Those cost a couple bucks at the big bucks, whatever, pick your poison. Whether you're going into Home Depot or whatever. So I thought, I'll go get one of those and I'll just replace it. And so I got there, and then I started looking around. I started thinking, those ones that they I think the ground fault protection thing, where somebody sticks a screwdriver in it, it shuts off automatically. That's probably a better idea and they're about 15 to 20 bucks depending on which one you get.
Right.
I thought, so I'll get one of those instead of the cheap one. And so I spent more time looking at shit at the home repair place, trying to figure out exactly what the hell I wanted. And so that took too big a portion of the day. And I finally get back with my sack of shit and go to the garage, and I get everything. The other one, you got to shut off the electricity and go through all that crap. And I'm trying to get this thing all plugged in and wired back. And I think I've got it. And instead, this is the dumb thing, because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And so I don't check first the electricity, just the general electricity, trying to figure out whether, and I've got this little gizmo, it looks like a pencil thing that you can get, and you hold it by the outlet, and if the outlet is hot, it beeps at you. It makes a beep beep and it lights up, so you know that you're going to get electrocuted or not. And so I've got that thing, and I could have checked ahead of time to know exactly what was going on, but I didn't. I just jumped into it, pulled the old one out, put the new one, all wired it, and it took me forever to put this and get this wired back on and get it back on the wall. And then I hit the switch for the breaker to thinking everything's going to turn back on magically. And so of course, when I turn the breaker on and I go over to the switch, nothing works. It's dead. I'm like, what the fuck? Anyway, figure out that the wire, there's a wiring issue. One of the wires that feeds the actual outlet itself is bad. And so I wasted like 3 hours messing around with this, and I'm still gonna have to call the electrician.
it's I was gonna ask how long it took. It seems that there are too many variables with electricity, and quite frankly, it scares me. I don't want to.
Well, out of all the home repair things, that should scare you. Yeah, more than anything, I have My brother-in-law, Harry, he's from Peru. He's very, very, he's a handy guy. He does drywall and stuff like that. And so he's taught me a lot of these things. He's the one that showed me the little pencil thing that you get that makes the beeping noise, let you know whether you're going to die or not. But anyway, he's real willing to jump into this stuff, and he kind of seems to know. And he's got this Peruvian, really laid back. They've got this sort of, if it works, good. If it doesn't work, whatever. It's like, there's another day tomorrow. We'll fix it then, that kind of attitude. But me, I just get more irate. I just start to get, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a white American guy thing. I think we get irate pretty quickly, from zero to irate in less than 3 hours, usually. So, why did I fucking do this?
We must have appropriated that from somebody, from somewhere.
I'm sure that we have. I was listening, I've been listening to a lot of NPR. I've been listening to the NPR One app. And it's just, you listen to NPR News, and then it'll drop in a podcast, recommend podcast, and if you want to listen, you can listen, or sometimes it just starts playing a show. And there was one thing they were doing yesterday was about, I don't know if it was a podcast or just a story, traffic jams. Oh, no, maybe it was This American Life. Whatever it was traffic jams in China that could last up to 7 days.
What?
Up to seven fucking, I didn't Google it. I meant to look it up because I want to see pictures. And they're just chill about it.
I wonder how that works. What you mean? Because you got to bring food for 7 days.
Yeah, you have to bring like a lot of. Yeah, they were talking to truck drivers, and it was fascinating. I'm like, if I'm in traffic an extra half an hour, I feel like I'm going to have another fucking stroke and maybe get out of my car like fucking Michael Douglas in the movie Falling Down, like just fucking angry and shoot some shit up, or just get on my cars, throw the fucking keys out the fucking window and walk the fuck away on top of cars. Like,
I'm hitchhiking out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
American white guys of our generation, no chill. Some of them, I'm sure. I'm not that guy, I'll tell you that.
Chinese, I wonder if there's probably a business opportunity. There's probably somebody that's like riding up on one of those little bicycles with
two wheels in the back,
serving food and shit.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, totally. Through these towns and the people, it's like, I don't know. I guess it's the infrastructure, the number of cars, people, so many things that are wrong. And it's one of the. I guess it's one of these things where it's like another thing to realize would be like, we don't have it that bad all the time. Guess what? America can be kind of great a lot of the time.
Yeah, we can call the electrician. China, they're like, we'll get to it. We'll figure this out.
Yeah. So I've been listening a lot of NPR, and the reason I do is because it counts as reading. That's official, by the way. I just want to let you know. I say that all the time. Right. You know why I say that all the time? Because guys my age just repeat themselves so fucking much.
Because somebody else is talking about a book, you can say, "Well, I heard on NPR that and then that makes you sound like you're."
I've said for years whenever someone asks me, "Hey, John, did you read that article in the New York Times?" I said, "You can stop at did you read?" I mean, it's like I barely will read a tweet. I'm just not much of a reader.
Yeah, I've been trying to make an effort towards it here. The other night, the night before last, I thought, all right, I'm going to read a little bit every night. Instead of turning on, usually I will turn on the TV for a little while, right before bed, kind of thing. And I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to read a little bit. So I get out Hemingway, For Whom the Bell Tolls, which I've got this really cool. I've got like a original. It's not a first printing, but it's a really nice old. Copy of it, I think, from I don't know when that book came out, but anyway, I got 4 pages into it, and I was just like, I was like, just out. I don't. That's what I get. The people that read at night, how they get anything read? Because it makes me go to sleep no matter what. And it wasn't just Hemingway that was making me do that. I think I'd do that, whatever. It wouldn't matter. It just I don't know. It's hard for me to stay awake while reading.
When I find myself reading at night, or especially at night, it'll get to a point where I will quickly read the same paragraph or sentence over and over again, and just sort of, and then forget where I am, or like my finger's on the passage, and it's like, whoa, shit, and I'm just asleep, So I've been getting audiobooks, taking them out of the library, listening to them on CD in the car, and or ripping them and then putting them on my phone. And sometimes even that, I get lost in it. I mean, there's one I'm listening to now called The Sellout by Paul Beatty. African-American author. It is an over-the-top satirical view of race in America. And okay. Check it out. It's nonfiction. Oh yeah. I mean, it's. I heard an interview with him, and I was fascinated by it. And very interesting. So,
could I just listen to the interview on NPR?
No. It's a Mark Maron interview from earlier. It's a WTF Mark Maron interview. Okay. And I think I had come across the guy before. I think I had seen him on something. I don't know the author, but I had never read anything by the guy. But so far, I'm enjoying it. But it is so over the top. You know, it's a black guy, his case is being heard in front of the Supreme Court, but I don't know what the case is. It's pretty interesting. I've told nothing about it. It's called The Sellout, Paul Beatty.
I could lie to you and say I'm going to read it. But
No, I know.
I got all winter to get through Hemingway. I'll work on that 4 pages at a time if I can keep that up, so for sure. And I'm just starting to warm up. I was out in the garage. I was just freezing my ass off. It's getting fairly chilly here in the Midwest this time of year. So,
and, yeah, getting cold here too.
And I was, it's the weekend, and I was doing the home repair thing, and I was just getting, like I said, more and more pissed off. And I'm thinking, God, a beer would be great right now. Except I'm involved in half sober October, so I decided that wouldn't be something I could do. There's this sober October thing that's a deal, I guess. I haven't looked at the website. I think it's to raise money for somebody somehow somewhere, and so I didn't hear about it until like halfway through October. So I thought I can do half of October, so I'm calling mine officially half sober October ish so yeah, I'm like halfway through, and it's been fine. So, but today a beer would have been would have calmed me down. I could have sat in the garage with my beer it's like a typical, an old man thing. You try to do the repair, you sit in your garage, and you yell at kids in the walking through your yard, maybe.
You don't yell at kids, right? For real though.
Would
not
I?
Yet.
I would, maybe, if I had a reason to. I haven't really.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked. It sounds like you're pretty cool with the kids, you know, and pretty patient with them.
I no, probably not. Why?
No? Just your daughter's friends?
It's a growth opportunity for me. Yeah, I know. I mean, the friends, I joke with them. We get along, you know, and that sort of thing. But I think being calm and it's a growth opportunity for me. It's I sometimes yes, but more often than not, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm a screamer, but I have been for sure. Hmm. And if anybody I know is listening to this right now that I truly know, not that you and I don't kind of know each other, we've not actually ever met, but the people that have been around me longer are like, yeah, he's full of shit. But yeah, I think over the last I don't know how long, but I think recently I've realized that that doesn't get you anywhere. Being that sort of person, and I'm trying to be more chill. I'm trying to work on that side of my personality, whether it's coming across or not. I don't know. What would you say? Are you more on the chill side then, or
no, far from it. No, I have a lot of unfounded anger, and I get really frustrated and annoyed very easily sometimes. There was that book in the 80s called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. That's all I do, sweat the small stuff. Big stuff I can handle, you know. I don't know why, you know, whether it's when I had my stroke or because it's like I feel like I don't really have control at that point, you know, and it's just like, well, I nothing I can do about it. Not that I have any control over traffic. Or, you know, what that asshole in front of me did. Like, last night I was driving my kids. We were driving to a family party. We went from Red Bank, New Jersey to East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour and a half drive. And this guy cut me off. A relatively young kid in some sort of little Mazda, you know, like a little Fast and the Furious type Mazda, you know. And he almost pushed me. I was in the left lane, probably doing about 65 and a 55, maybe even 70. He came over and got into my lane and literally pushed me over. Like, I had to swerve over. I didn't have a lot of room. And I fucking lost it. I was so angry. And I went into a rant. And I was trying to be cool with the kids. And I got really angry to the point that I didn't get on his ass, but I kind of went, I was like, because I see people driving like this all the time. I drive Uber and Lyft, and I'm not saying I've never made a mistake, but this guy, he continued now to drive on the car in front of his ass, you know what I'm saying? And he kept passing on the right to the middle lane, to the point that four lanes of traffic, he actually went all the way over the right. I thought he was getting off the exit. No, I don't know what the fuck he was doing. And then he came back, and I was... And I kind of used it as like a teachable moment when I finally gathered myself and sort of calmed down. I was talking to my kids about that sort of driving on someone's ass. And I've actually become calmer since driving for Uber and Lyft. I mean, because I have passengers, right? So I can't
shake your fist.
I shouldn't lose my shit when driving. You know, I'll comment on it, but it won't be yelling, cursing, screaming like a madman. If I'm in the car by myself, yes. If I'm in the car with my children, sometimes. You know, and I was talking to my kids about drinking and driving, and I didn't think this guy was drunk. I just thought he was driving like an asshole.
Right.
You know, and again, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, because it's like just about anyone, someone does on the road or in life, it's possible that is the first and only time they did it, right? It doesn't necessarily define them. And I'm sure that I've done things in my life plenty of times unwittingly or even wittingly and you know, piss someone off, but, so it's like trying to find this balance, yeah. You know, but I, you know, and I, speaking of not having any control and giving up control, NPR, I was listening to NPR because it counts as reading. Yep. And I listened to a story yesterday about a playwright, and it's called People, Places, and Things. It's about an actress who is addicted to drugs and alcohol, and while performing on stage, she like is so drunk and passes out, and the EMT come and the whole thing. And one of the things the guy said is that he and the actress both struggled with the 12-step process while writing and performing the thing because of like giving up. I've only been to like two AA meetings because I wanted to go. But I realized, this is not for me. I'm not I'm not an alcoholic.
It's like a Marla Singer type thing from...
I don't know Marla Singer. Who's that?
You know Marla Singer, yes, from Fight Club. You know, she was going to all the meetings just for the fun of it, right?
Oh, right. No, yeah. You know what? I forget the name. I'm not good at lines or names. Yeah.
The only reason I know that is because we've had a chicken named Marla Singer.
That's so pretty good.
Yeah, we named her after that.
Yeah, so anyway, but the guy, so he talks about this thing about, you know, the recovery and giving up to God. And he finally reconciled it, you know, that we just don't have control of everything. And the very last line of this, like, 4.5-minute story about this play, and it was so good because I've been saying this so much after having the stroke and people ask how you're doing. I was like, well, I woke up this morning. And he said, basically, this is the point he wanted to make. He's like, one day at a time, and life has to win every single day. And death only has to win once. And I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say it. I'm sure that it exists. I'm sure that it's out there. It really stuck with me. I'm like, fuck, yeah. Like, shit, you know?
Yeah.
So basically, that's what I'm doing. I don't want death to win. I mean, once, but just not yet.
Not today.
I'm not ready for death to win.
Not today. So you went to AA meetings just to check it out, just for the hell of it.
No, that's not true.
No.
That is not true. I didn't go to just check it out. No, right. There's a reason for it. I realized that when...
Okay.
Actually, quoting NPR doing that. Oh, yeah, I just shared something that I guess I'm going to have to talk about. Yes. I don't remember exactly when it was. No, I kind of do. It was maybe about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I was still married at the time. I'm going to say that my daughter was about 7 years old. My son was probably about 9-ish. Yeah, about 7 and 9. May, and it was a neighbor that lived across the street from us. They live in a beautiful house on the river. It was a beautiful day, probably like a somewhere between a you know, late spring, early summer day, like 70 degrees, sunny. And I went over. I got there before my ex-wife, or my then wife and kids, and I started drinking. as you would do at a communion. Shit-faced. Well, as you would at a communion. But it was good. I got, my neighbor gave me a double shot Bloody Mary to start.
Okay, yeah.
And that would have been fine. That would have been enough for the entire day. And then she had, I was trying to help her with her Sonos system, and I don't have one of these, and I'm working with that, and I'm drinking my, and then I have another one. I think I had a third one, and I was, I mean, the third one, it was ridiculous. I'm like done, but I kept drinking. I was drinking for hours. I was drinking, I think I was drinking like Coronas or something. And, it's right across the street. I know I'm not driving. I was feeling pretty good. I'm in a good mood. I know everyone. I've been on vacation with this family. And I remember at one point the party was thinning out, and I don't recall being completely out of control at any point. It's not the most drunk that I had ever been. And my daughter, Kylie, so my ex-wife, and my son wanted to go home. They were tired. So they went home. Kylie was still there. She was playing with her friend, and she wanted to go home to get a couple of American Girl dolls. All right, she was really big into American Girl dolls. So we go across the street to my house. She gets her dolls, and I go into my refrigerator because there were no more Coronas at the neighbor's house, and I grab two more beers, and I remember it. Like, so vivid a memory is that, like, I open up the, you know, the side-by-side door with one hand, and I see my daughter creep up behind me, like underneath the arm that's opening the door, as I take my other hand to grab the Coronas, and then I sort of look down at her, and I see her, and she basically tells me not to drink anymore. And I'm like, no, Kylie, fine, you can just get dolls, I get that. And I grabbed the two, and I went back. And again, not the most drunk I'd ever been, but when I went back, we had the two drinks. We were kind of the last ones to leave. And when I got home, she went upstairs to sleep. And I kind of remember tripping up the stairs, and I kind of remember falling asleep on, like, the couch in the living room. I woke up the next day, and I felt terrible. And I don't know. It just, there was something that image of my 7-year-old daughter noticing that I was drinking too much hit me, and it hit me really hard. Okay. And I just stopped cold turkey. I was like, I'm not drinking. And I didn't drink for 11 months. And I talked to a friend of mine who was in Narcotics Anonymous and maybe AA, and he's been sober for many years. And he recommended that I go and check out a brand. He gave me there's a website called In the Rooms, and they're not always up to date, so you got to follow up and see where the meetings are. And I went to my very first meeting. I showed up late, so I didn't get the whole introduction, didn't really get context. I didn't feel like I belonged. It probably would have been helpful to show up on time, but I was kind of lost. I was a little drunk. That's not true. I'm sure people show up drunk to meetings, though. Anyway, it was very surreal, and I really, there was no story that I heard, or there was nothing that I really could latch on to. And so I didn't go. And then I went to another meeting a couple of months later. Oh, and the other thing was, so this other meeting I went to, I showed up on time, and people show up, as anyone new? Yes, I raised my hand, and they have you, and you say your name, and all these people say their name. And there's a woman there, like, in her 30s with her child, you know, and I'm like, wow. And I didn't see anyone I knew, but a couple of people that I think I had seen out and about but didn't know them. And I'm like, this is just kind of weird. Like, the part that it wasn't the God thing. It was the people that were talking were great, but at that beginning where they said, hi, my name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, my name is Lori, and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, I raised my hand. I said, hi, my name is John, and I'm here. Because that's all I knew at that moment. And I have to say, after that meeting was over, I had about two or three guys walk up to me and sort of latch onto me. Maybe this is something they do. And I don't know if it's because I made that statement and they gave me their number and they were really friendly. And again, I did connect a little bit more with the people at this meeting. But I don't know. It didn't feel right for me. And I didn't drink for 11 months. At no point during that 11-month period did I feel compelled to drink. You know?
So did you, just curious, like prior to this, had you been like a heavy, what you felt would be a heavy drinker, or was this just a binge thing that you?
No, I would call, and look, I think it's possible to be a binge drinking alcoholic. I don't know though. Again, I don't fully understand it. Right. I think I was a binge. I think for me, it was an intermittent binge drinker. And even if I knew I was too drunk, I wouldn't stop drinking.
Okay.
Since starting to drink again, I can hold my alcohol a lot better. Seriously.
You so know, good. I've got a theory on this, mm-hmm. and it comes from somebody who's drank a lot in their life. I have known people that absolutely positively are what I would call alcoholics, that they get the shark-eyed thing where, they, after a short amount of alcohol drinking, they disappear into themselves and become something that is different than whatever sober version of that is. If they even have a sober moment, I've known people that are mm-hmm. Regular, hardcore dumping down, a case of beer a day or a mm-hmm. bottle of vodka a day type of people. And I know that chemically, there's something that goes on with those people that snaps, and it snaps quickly, and they are unable to stop drinking. I know a guy that I grew up with that on his deathbed, I think he was in his 30s-ish, maybe late 30s, mm-hmm. early 40s. Wow. I wasn't there, but he told friends of mine that were there that were saying, hey, you need to just quit drinking. They're in the hospital. Tell him, just quit. Just fucking quit. You don't need to keep drinking. And he looked at him and said, no. And he was crying. He said, I can't quit. Okay, so there's that guy, and then it killed him. He's dead. Mm-hmm. His liver failed, his pancreas. He had pancreatitis and all this shit. I mean, he went through all kinds of shit, DUIs hurt himself, falling down stairs, and all kinds of shit. So you've got that end of things. Then you've got the people that do the and I like to think of it like the college binge drinking thing, and go through that sort of stuff. And I think there's maybe I would cede to the idea that if somebody keeps drinking, and they're going to end up perhaps in the same basket as the guy that died. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of people that binge drink only for one reason. It's got nothing to do with necessarily being a quote unquote alcoholic, or nothing to do with a chemical dependency. I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that drink, and whether it's binging or even doing it on a regular basis, they do it because they're a fucking asshole. And I mean this mm. truly. I mean, it's not only drinking. Okay, I would say there's people that golf because they're an asshole. There's people that run because they're an asshole. There's people that go bow hunting in fucking Wyoming because they're an asshole. They do this at the expense of the rest of the people in their life. They don't give two shits, one flying fuck about anybody else. They just want to, this is my beer, this is my moment, this is my, and there's probably, to less degree, I was going to say smokers, but that actually is more addictive. I don't know. I really struggle with the some of the descriptions. I think the AA is a proven, I think it's a proven way for people to stop drinking and stay off alcohol, which is really a good thing. So I don't have any issue with that. But I think there's a shit ton of people that if they just looked in the mirror and said, you fucking asshole, what are you doing? Just fucking, and it's, okay, so for somebody, I've smoked weed at one point in my life every day for probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. I smoked weed every fucking day. That was a habit that was, something that was sort of difficult to quit doing. It was somewhat hard. Caffeine is hard to get off of. Cigarettes, I smoked cigarettes way back in the day. It's certainly something that's hard to get off of. Is alcohol any different for most people? I don't think so. For most people, I don't think so.
It's hard for me. It's hard for me to really even know, because again, for me, I think it was binge drinking, and for me, it was a moment. And that moment affected me. It had an impact on me,
because well, sure,
I was sort of lost in it, Yeah. And again, it's hard. Like it's, I may have been in my head, but I felt like in that second meeting that there was some sort of pressure. Like it'd be like, you have to say you're an alcoholic. Why? Because I showed up here? Like, no, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sure there are plenty of people that may be alcoholics that say I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a problem, right? I don't know. I there are a lot of assholes in this world, and you know, I say, well, maybe for some it's an escape, for some it's self-medication. At what point does it become a problem? I think it becomes a problem when it affects your life and affects the lives of other people around you, and any way you can stop or change those bad habits, whatever they are,
right,
it's probably a good thing.
Right. So, you know, the only thing that bugs me about that, and I don't disagree with what you just said, was the idea that, and then the next step is, and it is that it's become a problem, or, you know, like in your instance, there was a day where that you became a problem to your daughter. You were screwing up the day because you were doing something that didn't, you know, she was uncomfortable with. If you had, like I said, in the morning, if you had walked out to the driveway and said, "See you later, Kylie. I'm going to be gone all fucking day because I'm going to play 36 rounds of golf, like some people I know do." She would have been just as fucking upset with you, and just as distant with you at some point, perhaps later in the day. But nobody's going to look at you and say, "You've got a disease. You've got the golfing disease."
Right.
No, you're just an asshole when you do stuff like that. You're taking yourself away from.
Well, you're selfish. You're selfish. I mean, you're definitely selfish.
Yeah,
right.
Yes. Yeah. And we all do that. We all do that with shit. I hear people say, like, oh God, you know, they're guilty about spending money on certain hobbies or whatever. I heard somebody talking about buying. And it was recording equipment. I shouldn't be buying all this. I shouldn't be buying all these electronics all the time. If you're going to go out and keep spending a ridiculous amount of money on a hobby that you've got, then you know it's ridiculous at some point, and that could be money you could be buying something for your kid or doing maybe taking a couple of days of vacation with your kid. Does that make you a better person? Yes. Does that mean you have a disease? No, it just means you're selfish.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, for me, that hobby, prostitution, I was spending a lot of money. That was a really short period of time. Before I had kids, though, so it wasn't as selfish.
You have a disease.
But the sex was unprotected, so it was fine. I mean, my ex-wife and I weren't married at the time. That's not true. I just made that up. That's false. I've always... I'll spend too much money. I'll waste time doing things, not fixing anything, not reading, but I will waste all that time. But I don't do the types of things like that. Like, I have something inside of me that if it feels like I'm doing something really selfish here, and it's like I should be doing something with my children, or I there's something inside of me that shuts off. And for me, that one singular moment didn't feel right that my daughter called me out and I ignored her completely, and I continued to move forward when she was correct and she was only 7.
Yeah. And there is something about alcohol that when you get in that situation where you're like, it's easier to say fuck it and grab those couple beers and head back across the street than maybe some other situation that you're in. So I can see both sides of it. And like I said, I do think that AA perhaps is, well, I was going to say it's the only successful way for a lot of people to get off alcohol, but I don't know that that's true either. There's some of these places like Passages, Malibu, and some of these places that are popping up that are saying the 12-step program is actually, it's bullshit, and it's not a requirement that you work your way through all these steps and stages, and that they can have the same amount of success rate by whatever methodology it is that they're using. And I'm not sure what that methodology is. A lot of it is, I think anytime you interrupt a pattern, if you can get, a period of time where whatever it is, you're away from it. And, in the case of alcohol, usually I think people that are drinking a lot, you're not taking care of yourself in other ways, you're not exercising, you're not eating right, you're not doing a lot of stuff. And I think some of these places, like I was talking about, like Passages, they get people in a situation where they disconnect them from the alcohol or from the drugs or whatever the case may be, and then, okay, we're going to give you a bunch of, you're going to do yoga, you're going to, you're going to meditate, you're going to eat right, we're going to talk to you about healthy things and healthy, a different way of thinking.
Right. But isn't that almost like filling one addiction with another one, right? Like this idea, like you mentioned before, almost.
Yeah, I think people do that. I certainly do that. I think that if you have an addictive lifestyle and or an addictive personality style, and I think I probably do in a lot of ways, you know, you can go from one thing to another. I put running on my list of things you'd be an asshole about because I know I have absolutely in my life I have. Taken things to the extreme, and I've gotten off into a feeling of gee, isn't this a glorious pursuit of mine? I'm off running marathons, and I'm at the same time though I'm disappearing from family life so much that they're like looking at me like, who's this guy coming in the door now with stinky clothes again? I'm going to take virtue signal online when I'm on Facebook and when I'm on Twitter and when I'm on all my social media, I'm going to tell people, look at me. I run marathons. Isn't this fucking great? And and it does feel, you know, absolutely, it feels good. And people will walk up to you and go, oh, that's great, man. I saw you ran, you know, that's awesome. You're in a marathon. You know, well, yeah, my fucking family didn't see me for months. And I'm not saying people shouldn't do things like that because I think it is a healthy thing to do as long as it doesn't control and dominate your life to the exclusion of others. There's a point where all of it becomes selfish and it becomes a detriment to the people around you if that's all that exists, unless you've got some really fucking good way of making it up to them.
I don't know. You know, in some ways, it seems that like you have the whether it was the drinking sort of madman style, which was sort of all day, golfing, bowling league, all of these things. It's like you have this traditional family in America where it's like the man went out and worked. It's like, and he was at the bar when the baby was born. Yep. You know, it's like 50s and 60s, right? And it's like it was expected. And then it got to a point. I think I don't know when it started, but I'm sure women had it, but. I was actually talking to someone recently, and I know my mom did it. She was in a ceramics once a week on Thursday nights. Yeah. She did ceramics. And I remember, like, you know, you painted ceramics. You weren't actually, you know, like, you know, the movie Ghost, like Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze, you know. Anyway, and, you know, it was like, that was the woman finally gets a break, and she finally gets out and is, you know what I'm saying, the one that was the stay-at-home mom, the mom, the homemaker, you know. And
that probably didn't really happen until maybe the 80s-ish.
I would say the mid to late 70s. Tupperware parties were a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of this, but it's like men were just like, yeah, we work all week. You know, I was like, what was that? Like, you... I don't know. You fuck a handful of times a year. You get a couple of, you pop a bunch of kids out. I don't get it. I don't know. I wasn't part of that. I was a kid and my parents, dad was in a bowling league, but I mean, I don't know.
Definitely existed. There's absolutely, I mean, that's the childhood I remember, not so much in my household that it exactly being that way, but I remember the world absolutely being that way. That there was the bowling league, there was the like I said, the golf thing, the there's, you know, where the guy would, like you said, he'd be the hardworking dude, come home, dinner was ready for him when he got there, he ate the dinner, and you know, I'm going off to whatever, and it wasn't maybe like every night, that's for sure. Also, it was rare, I think, for kids of, like, I remember when I was like, oh, probably, I don't know, maybe 8, 9, 10 years old, I was mowing the lawn. And so, you know, there were things that you did that dad, you know, didn't do that dads would do now, or even moms do now. It still blows me away in a way, and this makes me sound really dated. I was running the other day, being an asshole. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was running, and I came through this fairly nice neighborhood, and there was a woman that was out, she was out running a push mower, just a regular, you know, mower in this nice neighborhood. And that still, to me, to this day, strikes me as odd. That there is that she was mowing, and this makes me, okay, sexist, whatever the fuck you want to call me, but I just think if there's a guy that what's he doing? Is maybe there's no guy in the house? I don't know, but I like at this house, Nobody is the girls are not going to do that. I mow always. Nobody's touched a mower ever, and I know that's not the norm in today's world, but I don't know.
I'm drinking my whiskey and I'm mowing the lawn. Everyone, stay away from my push mower.
It's like, God, it's like, exactly.
You don't even have to say it, but it's just like, okay, Dad's going to mow the lawn now.
Yeah, get him a drink. Get out of his way.
Man.
Get out of his way. He's mad. He's angry. He fucked up that thing in the garage. Get out of his way.
If I were a girl in America right now, I would not want to mow the lawn, but I would just fucking mow the lawn to be defiant. Mowing the lawn.
Right.
But you can't stop me.
But I don't think it's probably happening too often, actually, because I just read the statistic. I was talking about it was an article about the wage gap, male-female wage gap, and the angle of the article was that the fallacy of the male-female wage gap, and one of the things that was pointed out in the article was in the workforce, 93% of all workforce deaths in the United States are men. So part of the wage gap that exists in the United States is due to the fact that men are doing dangerous, stupid things with heavy equipment or with lawnmowers or whatever. And so some of these jobs that pay well, because you can get killed, women aren't they're not lining up for this shit. They're like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm not doing that. You know, why would I do that? There's a dude will go do that, you know? You know,
I just had a moment of you saying that. I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know how many female listeners we have, but you know, you got these guys. They're just like angry white guys that are like the women. It's like the whole. It would seem that some. It's like the idea of any level of equality or even talking about it is like the stick up their ass, kind of pissed off about it. And I just said, when you say that 93% of all men dead, I would love to hear a woman listening to the podcast going, yes, just like clapping. Fuck yeah.
And they deserve it. And they fucking deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. You had it coming. Yeah.
You
lost your arm in a fucking machine. Fuck you.
You deserved it. You fucking can't golf now, can you? Stay home. Fishing. Try to fish with one arm, you fuck.
Yeah. Hey, there was a guy that played the drums with one arm. He wasn't very good when he had two arms, so I don't know how he was.
Rise up, gather round.
pour some sugar on me. What was that? Rick Allen? No, the drummer from Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, yeah, I get his.
I'm saying his name is Rick Allen. The other, you know, the guy that one of the guitarists in the band, one of the guitarists, his name is Phil Collin, not Phil Collins.
Yeah,
Phil Collin.
Yeah, I saw the Access TV thing with them recently, and they still
recently.
Yeah, well, they're Access TV AXS. They do all these. It's a lot of concerts and a lot of music stuff, and they're, I don't know. A lot of them are really, really interesting. They're sometimes retrospective sort of things, and I don't know. They're good. I think they've also got they're the one that's got the Sammy Hagar's show. Sammy Hagar's does this like interview show sort of thing with other rock and roll people, and it's also got they got the Dan Rather thing on there.
Oh yeah, Dan Rather. Yeah. I like Dan Rather.
Yeah, and he's interviewing a lot of rock and roll cats. People, they're interesting. If you're, I think, I don't know, if you're of a certain age, maybe you're maybe more inclined to watch that shit than the rest. But
you know, the mowing the lawn thing. I remember growing up, my Cub Scouts den leader, Mrs. Johns, she mowed the lawn.
Wow.
And it wasn't a small lawn.
Back in the day.
And her dad, I mean, her husband, friend Harold.
He drank a lot.
he was a mailman, a mail carrier. And she would mow the lawn. And she was like a very thin, thin woman, short hair, mowing the lawn. And I just remember it struck me as odd. It really did. It always did.
Yeah. What the fuck was he doing at this time?
Yeah, you know, and I think I went through that too sometimes when I was a bit of a stay-at-home dad, and I struggled with it, especially. I lived in Manhattan. When we lived in Manhattan, my ex-wife went to work after our first child was born,
right,
when Cameron was born 15 years ago. And she only worked like six blocks away down on Wall Street. We lived downtown. And so I would sometimes walk my son over to her office and nurse him, and we'd get lunch together or something, you know. And but there were plenty of times that I would walk around with my son, and I'd go to the park, and there were some, you know, Haitian nannies, Jamaican nannies, you know, some moms, you know. And whenever I'd go to a lot of places, and women would say to me, "Oh, you're babysitting." No, I'm taking care of my son. Like, this is my kid. Like, it's like a weird thing. Like I do get caught up on that. You know, it's like, no, that's my kid. Like, but at the same time, it felt strange. There were times where it felt strange to make less money than my ex-wife when she would, she loved gardening, loved doing stuff, and like she was fine to mow the lawn sometimes. And I was like, okay. But I was conscious of it, like, oh, someone's going to judge me because I'm not mowing the lawn or I'm not doing that. I fucking hate mowing the lawn.
I guess what what I assume is going on, and this is probably just my own, you know, stupid thing that I've got in my head that is maybe right, maybe not. But what I'm assuming is going on is she's mowing the yard and she's also doing, you know, three-fourths of the other shit, which is the way most households exist, whether people want to admit it or not. Usually the female in the relationship is doing about fucking three-fourths of the shit in the house. Mm-hmm. You know, when you throw together housework, laundry, dishes, yada yada yada, kid things. Generally, it's not an even situation. So, you know, things like I guess I just look at it as the really shitty stuff. Maybe I can do less and not feel as guilty about it if I'm doing the shitty stuff, like when, you know, it's as an example, on a winter morning when I hear the you know, the snow plow go by at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, ah, fuck, you know, I'm getting up, I'm headed out, I'm clearing the driveway before everybody else is even out of bed, that kind of shit.
I hated shoveling snow. Hated it.
Yeah, I mean,
always have.
So, and I'm sure there are households where mom jumps up and does that too. But maybe if everything's equal, even Steven, 50-50, maybe that makes sense. I don't know. But if not, then you wonder why later she cracks and you know, smacks him on the head with a bowling pin or something. Yeah.
My dad is kind of so old school that even when I got separated and divorced, if it was snowing or stuff, my dad would ask me, "You go over to the house, you take care, you shovel snow for Andrea." I'm like, "No, I don't live there anymore. It's not my house." Yeah, but your kids, it was like, I mean, I'd help around, I'd ask her, I'd offer to do some things sometimes. It was like, it's not that I didn't even want to shovel the snow, it's like there were times she didn't want to, like she was too proud, like it was okay, like all right, she took care of it. Well, you know, but
yeah,
I don't know, it didn't seem like it was my place.
No, and I would agree it's not, because I think at some point, if you're you know, if you're doing too many things like that, you wonder, you know, why couldn't you have just stayed married?
Yeah. Yeah, let's pretend. Yeah. I'll live in the pool house. Yeah. Let's just make believe.
Make believe. There's no sex, but I'm still shoveling, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Married. My relationship is complicated. That's a status on Facebook and has been for a while. Every relationship is complicated.
Well,
it's a fact.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Every single one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, we're headed off in November. Speaking of old angry white guys, we're taking the kids. This is a kind of a civics lesson or a government sort of thing, a lot of times I like to watch these shows, and this has nothing to do with what we're doing, but I like to watch these shows where these people are living in Alaska, and then they take the kids out of school for like a week to go hunt seals or some shit like that, and then they give this little speech where they go, oh, they're going to learn more with me than they would in school. And I think that's probably true. You know, they're learning a life lesson. So we're going to try to do that in November. There's this guy. Have you ever heard of Dr. Jordan Peterson? You ever heard of this guy?
No,
all right.
No,
he's, I have not. He's a guy from Harvard. Used to be a Harvard professor. I think he's now or was at the University of Toronto, a professor, and he's caught a bunch of flack in the last year or so because there was a bill that passed in Canada that compelled those. I think he had to be working maybe in a government role or something like that, but the law was passed that you have to use the pronouns that people choose for themselves. So if I am somebody that wants to be, I'm non-binary, and you have to refer to me as they or them, or you want to, or any compelled pronoun that you make up, it was a legal requirement that as a employee that you have to use this stuff. Well, he's a professor, and he's like starting to figure out that he's going to have to come up with a list for every time he's dealing with anybody in class, and try to figure out what their personal pronoun is. And it was just something that he thought was silly, and he said, fuck you, I'm not doing it. And he caught a lot of flack for this, and it became a real big public thing in Canada. And anyway, he's this guy that he lectures a lot about postmodernism and the evils of postmodernism and neo-Marxism, which is all, it's a bunch of stuff that parts of it I understand and a lot of it I don't. But he's going to be lecturing at the University of Wisconsin, which is Madison, which is a few hours up the road, a 2-3 hour drive from where I live. Mm-hmm. We're taking the kids to it, and they're not going to understand. They'll understand less than I do, but we may not be that far apart on the whole idea of what's going on. But we're not taking them for the idea so much that they understand what the lecture is all about. What I'm thinking is going to happen is there's going to be, and about 99% sure that there's going to be all the liberal side versus the conservative side are all going to be represented there, yelling and protesting. And there's going to be a this is going to be a really good way for them to see, okay, this is what a social justice warrior looks like. This is what a all these different names that they throw around. This is what a alt-right blah, blah, blah looks like, or this is what the whole idea between kind of what's going on now in politics. We're just going to let them kind of see that at its base level and see how that shakes out.
Yeah, I'm looking him up now. You have mentioned him to me before. I just didn't remember. And it's Critiques of Political Correctness on White Privilege. Peterson has criticized the use of the term white privilege, in quotes, stating, the idea that you can target an ethnic group with a collective crime, regardless of the specific innocence or guilt of the constituent elements of that group, there's absolutely nothing that is more racist than that. So anyway, and he goes, postmodern feminism, cultural appropriation, and he's got, and then the pronouns.
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily disagree with that, just on a base level looking at it. At the same time, as a white guy, I do like saying that I have white privilege, right? What does that really mean? Like, what does it really mean? I'm not apologizing for it. I'm just acknowledging that, in some ways, right? And it doesn't really hurt me to say that.
Yeah.
The point. But again, it's not like a thing, but not necessarily every white person has white privilege. Like, I remember talking to this relatively young African-American guy who... He really had trouble getting his head around a white homeless guy.
Right.
Like, he couldn't. Right. And he was kind of thinking out loud. He wasn't apologetic about it. He wasn't mean about it. But it was like, because he's like this, he's a millennial, hardworking guy. He's just sort of, hustling, And he just didn't understand how that guy got there. Right. But you don't know that guy's story.
No.
Homelessness is not just about money and privilege and this. It's about, there's so much more to it. Mental illness. So it's like, so I totally get it. I kind of get where he's coming from. It's I guess it's the wink, wink, and the nudge kind of stuff with, like, the extremes of the alt-right or this, and you're saying one thing, but I think there's some subtext there, or more than subtext in what you're saying.
Yeah, I think most of these things are big overgeneralizations about, if you say white privilege, like you said, certainly white people in a lot of cases do have some advantages. Do they always? No. Are there people that have had it as bad or worse than some black people? Yeah, absolutely. It just depends on there's so many varying factors there, but what I don't know what I can understand that, but what I don't understand is and I have zero, I can tell you right now, white guilt. I've had
I don't have white guilt. I just have guilt.
I was Catholic, so you gotta have that's kind of ground into your DNA. But as far as the idea that I'm gonna feel guilty about being descended from Irish Catholic,
Liz, I don't love the idea of guilt. I mean, you know, I don't know that it's something that's really helpful, you know, to feel guilty about something. I'm not saying it never happens. And for something like that, it's like, I don't represent all white guys. I probably don't even represent some white guys. Mm-hmm. I represent me.
Yeah.
Maybe a few other douchebags from Staten Island who fucked up their life and blew their fucking white privilege and fucking, yeah. That's the case across the board. That black guy over there doesn't speak for all black guys. You know, that Hispanic woman, and it's like it gets to a point where, and then. You know, I remember in college, there was a guy, I don't know where he was from, I don't know if he's from South America, but his skin was brown. He was a Republican, and I remember, and he was from New York City, and he believed a certain way. And there were other people that told him, that's crazy. How can you believe that? You don't fucking know that guy,
yeah.
Because that's who he is. You're a sellout, you're an Uncle Tom, you're this, you're that. It's like, shut the fuck up. You don't know that he's allowed to feel that way. You don't have to like him. You don't have to agree with him, but it's not by virtue of he's that or that color. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Or you could actually him and still disagree with him, which is possible, which is kind of lost on a lot of the world these days. Is that, and that's the it used to be. You know, you said we're talking about back in the 70s or the 80s. There was a period in time where people used to say a lot. This phrase would be repeated to people. They would say, you know, I don't agree with anything that you're saying. We're diametrically opposed. But this is America, and I above all, the most important thing is that you have the right and the privilege to believe what you believe, and I have the right and the privilege to believe what I believe. Then we can both part as friends and or be friends.
Yeah. You're allowed to believe. Believe what you believe, even though you're wrong. Okay, so let's get a drink. Let's get a beer.
Well, yeah, and seriously, that went on. I think it went on in politics, even at a certain point. And shit, now has gotten to the point where everybody, you know, it's jumped up from this. This ridiculous thing where immediately people skip past 15 answers in the test when they're trying to analyze somebody, and they go right from point one, you're white, to all the way down to the bottom, you're a Nazi fucking fascist, you're a Nazi fascist, you know, whatever. Yeah, there's these stupid jumps in logic that are made that just don't make any sense, and I don't know. To me, it's. I just don't know how the world, how the pendulum swings back at some point. I don't know where we get as a nation better when everybody thinks about the world that way. It's strange.
Yeah. I don't like the expression agree to disagree, but at the same time, it doesn't, you see senators get along all the time. They've been friends for years, you know, they don't necessarily agree on their politics. You had James Carville that ran the, the Clinton campaign. Yeah. And then you had his wife, Mary Madeline. Turns out that she was a Republican until 2016. Now she's a Libertarian. I think that might be happening more and more with some Democrats pulling away from that, Republicans pulling away from it. I see
and I hear a lot, I think, of people now that are realizing that if you're you could be a Republican and be a truly wacko right wing, sort of Republican. You can be a Democrat and be off the edge of the left wing, sort of. And those groups want to make such a loud noise that they try to convince the rest of the world that you have to be there or you can't be on the same team. And maybe you can't. But what I'm hearing more and more seems like to me is there's a lot more reasonable people that are sort of somewhere in the middle, just to the right of center, just to the left of center, that are starting to talk to each other, I think, a little bit more. And some of that has to do with the fact that we've got Donald Trump in office as a polarizing figure, and there's a bunch of people that are going, you know what, he's fucking crazy, and so are those other two groups. And maybe there's somewhere else in the middle here that makes sense, and we can get along and have a world where we don't have to be these polarizing factions.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know. I hope that's where we're going. I hope that's the direction that we're talking to one another a little bit more. And many of you see what's her name, Sarah Silverman, who's very very lefty.
Yeah.
Lefty liberal. She has a show, and she went down to a family down in the South. They were hunters, guns, and whatever. And she's the New York Jew, you know, Boston Jew, yeah. You know. And she had a good time with them. She talked to them, and they kind of talked about stuff, and nobody was pushing. You know, I mean, it was edited well and it was fun and funny. And there was someone else too. I was listening to something where they were public or, oh, you know, it was the guy that used to run NPR actually. He wrote a book about Republicans, and he sort of started looking at the media. I wish I remember what it was. I'll try to tell you, maybe tweet it out. But it was a similar idea and a similar story, but it was like people that, you know, that you didn't necessarily agree with, you didn't, you know, their politics or whatever, and you're actually talking to them, and then you're looking at it differently.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not this polarizing thing like, that's the worst thing ever. How can you do that? I mean, I'm fascinated by all of it, you know, and it's like, it's like saying that I have privilege because I'm white. You don't know my story.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, I will still joke about it. I'll still say I have it. I don't think it's completely not a thing, but it doesn't define everyone. I'm just saying, I know my story. I do have it. I've had a lot of privilege.
Well,
my life has been easy until this point.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of white people, truly, that have grown up in shit conditions and have been treated poorly. There's, we've all heard Driving While Black, and we know how some of those stories have played out horribly with some of the, you know, some of the news that's been big in the last year or two. But there's a whole lot of DWPs, the Driving While Poors, those people that got the same stupid shit white people going on, and they can't feel like they can't get a fucking break because they've grown up in such shit conditions. You know, not everybody, you know, we all know about Eminem as an example. Not everybody that grew up in the fucking trailer court in Detroit got out. You know, there's a bunch of those dumb motherfuckers that are still there.
Well, there's also DWS, Driving While Stupid, which is probably about 93% of the population.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, if you watch any of these shows, these cops type shows, and there's a new one, I can't remember what it's called, where they're driving around, it's a live thing. And the people that get pulled over with, they've got a taillight out or whatever, but they've got 10 pounds of pot in the vehicle, you know. So okay, here's a simple thing that you can do. If you know you've got this situation going on, check your taillights, you know, do a little walk around, check your blinkers, maybe get that shit fixed. Maybe they're not handy. Maybe that's it.
Did you hear about the this Netflix series Stranger Things? There was one of the actors. He's like a 23-year-old British guy. I think he plays the character Jonathan. He looks like a cross between Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live.
I've seen his picture.
Yeah, and he looks like Michael Jackson just at the end there. Anyway, he got busted coming into the U.S. for having coke. A drug-sniffing dog. Yeah, Charlie Heaton banned from the U.S. because of drug traces.
it's like...
Wow, he missed the premiere.
You know, and you got to wonder, you know, like I said, Driving While Stupid. It's like, you know, there's... and maybe this is... Maybe he should be there. AA, Narcotics Anonymous or something. Maybe he's gotten to the point where he's so far down the road that he can't make good decisions. I don't fucking know, but... Yeah, there's.
Have you been watching? Have you been watching Stranger Things?
No, I've. I watched saw the first season, and we were going to get started on it, and haven't yet. So I'm completely in the dark as to what's going on, and realizing that if I don't get going with it pretty soon, there's going to be no doubt spoilers out there.
So I've avoided all the spoilers. I've only watched 1.5 episodes for the first season until last night when I watched season 2, episodes 1, 2, and part of 3. I'm trying to catch up, but you know what happened? I watched it last year when it first came out. I just saw it. I'm like, I want to watch this. What is this? I'm a big E.T. Spielberg guy. I'm of that age, you know. It takes place in 1984. And my kids watched an episode or two with me, and then they went back to their mom, and they watched the whole series without me. And I was like, okay, I got left in the dust. So, but when we started the podcast today, I was playing a song from the soundtrack, and I tell you, I was playing Africa by Toto.
Yes,
and
I heard that.
Yeah, right? So I wasn't even on the mic. The music for this is crazy. It must cost a fortune. They had Thriller, Whip It by Devo, they had Wango Tango by Ted Nugent. It's all over, and it's all the time. It must be spending a stupid amount of money on this. Netflix does not fuck around. Every Breath You Take by the Police.
Really?
That can't be inexpensive.
No. They've got to pay a ton of royalties there, I would think.
It's pretty good. I recommend watching it. And as far as spoilers, I don't know. I'm having trouble following it, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a thing. It's big. It's Halloween weekend.
Maybe this weekend. Maybe this weekend. Later. I mean, we don't have much of the weekend left, but it is.
Nine episodes. Easy watch.
Easy watch. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. I've been watching this other Netflix original thing, and I was looking at my phone trying to figure out what the hell it's called. But it's not showing up on the list of stuff that I've seen here. It's something that I saw was recommended actually by Stephen King, and it's this. It's a deal about these FBI guys that go around, and they are. It's like set in the. It starts off, I guess, basically around, I would guess, late 60s, and they are interviewing. And I'm not sure if this is just some totally made up shit. If these guys were actually.
Is it Mindhunt? Mindhunter?
Yes, that's it. Yeah,
is that the one?
Yeah, they're interviewing serial killers, and it's it's pretty good. Yeah, and like I said, Stephen King recommended it. So
I've heard. I've heard about. I'm really behind. There's so many.
Oh, man.
Ozark. I've heard great things about that. Yeah. I haven't watched that.
That's really good. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you'd like that. Yeah, well done. Yeah. Jason Bateman is he's awesome in that, and Laura Linney and Jason Bateman are in that one, and it's quite good. I enjoyed that a lot.
Jerry Seinfeld signed a big deal with them, and he's got a thing. Jerry before Seinfeld. I watched bits and pieces of that. There's a lot.
I heard though. Is he going to do his same act? I heard that he has not written any new material. Since you know he was doing his thing back then, I guess he still does the same material. No,
I don't think so. I think that I think he actually is one that does all new stuff. I don't think he does the old stuff.
Because I thought I heard,
but I don't know.
I heard Rogan or somebody saying that he was still doing his old material. It was like, and he thinks, it's funny. People will keep listening to it. So yeah, I don't know. I'd even watch the old stuff because I'm not sure how much of it I'd remember. But you know, that style of that 80s style of that delivery style sounds so weird now when you hear comedians do that. The whole style of
what, we've evolved.
Yeah, comedy has really. It's more you hear more. It's more storytelling kind of stuff, almost the way they do it. It seems like that style seems to be around a lot. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Maron's kind of like that. He's not a setup punch guy. I was talking to someone, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I've heard of Mark Maron. Yeah, yeah. He's kind of like an alt comic." No, not really an alt comic. He's a traditional comic. He's just more of a storytelling comic, and it's not setup punch.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I still love, I love Stephen Wright and Mitch Hedberg, who died. Like, I mean, they were really good joke writers.
Yeah.
I mean, just smart and funny. It's just a different kind of cadence to it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I guess I haven't watched that much stand-up up until recently, and I'm just starting to kind of get back into some of it. And, I like Bill Burr. I do, but
yeah, Bill Burr is good. You know, it's just there are young kids coming up now. I just came across one. I watched him on Conan O'Brien. I wish I remember his name. And it's like he's just really kind of funny. I mean, I'll try to send you the link. He's just weird and offbeat, like a really young kid. Like, I mean, he couldn't have been more than 24 and grew up poor from the South, but he doesn't look like he grew up poor. You know, it's he does a joke about it because like if you're a comedian.
I know the guy. I know the guy. Yeah,
you know who I'm talking about?
I can't remember his name, but I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah.
Basically, he does a thing where he grew up poor. He said, but he knows that he looks like the kid in the movie. That's like, do you know who my father is? You know.
Yeah.
And and I was like, he's kind of offbeat, and he did a whole thing about avocados and like how avocados are basically assholes. Like, you know, oh, I'm not ready yet. And it's like he's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's I like him. I don't know much about him. Don't know how much material he has, but I think he's gonna be pretty big. I think he's gonna do something.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know what the fuck his name is either. But you know,
yeah. I was going to say, once we get that website going and I don't do a damn thing. You do all the driving and heavy lifting. And we'd have links to guide people. They can be like, hey, what was that thing? And we don't even know because we're old. We forget things.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show. Let's let Mr. Big Voice take us out.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed Unbecoming of Age. Bonus content at unbecomingofage.com. Subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Find us on social media at Unbecoming of Age.
And sometimes when we touch,